Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Off we go in hour number two. Thanks for being with us. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. A lot of different directions going today, except 10 minutes into the show. The Wells Report, after 103 days, finally came out. More on that with Clark Judge in a minute. Let me just tell you, this segment of the show brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. The Santan Ford experience for me is as simple as this. For 3 years, the Ford brand, the Ford name, and the people at Santan Ford, General Manager Tim Hovick and company, say, Brad, whatever you do, wherever you go, we are with you. And that means right down to what I drive. I drive the Ford Fusion. I get 52.5 miles per gallon because it's a hybrid. From business, to stadiums, to ballparks, to being a dad at night, going on a date with my wife, I've got a vehicle I feel very comfortable in. Guys, can you say the same thing? You pull up to the valet, you're kind of like, when you pick up a business associate, are you a little embarrassed? When you're driving around as much as I am and you see the price of gas, I just whiz on by, guys. I get 600 miles on a tank of gas, all right? The Fusion Hybrid makes a lot of sense for me. I'm 6'8". I fit in with no problem. It's from Santan Ford. Santan Ford, just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Clark Judge, the host of Talk of Fame Network. TalkOfFame.com. Check out all the content and information on a weekly basis. Terrific show this week. They have John Harbaugh as one of their guests. They had Brett Favre on a couple of weeks ago. There was terrific. On short notice, wanted to have Clark on the NFL and the announcement of Deflategate. I guess, Clark, we're going to start with the words generally aware, because that's what Ted Wells said around Tom Brady. What do you make out of it? I know it's been less than an hour. What are your initial thoughts on the Wells response?
Well, it strikes me, Brad, it took him, over 100 days or something like that to come up with a 240-page report where they say it's more probable than not and generally aware. There's a lot of couching of terms here. And I think you either did it or you didn't. You know, you either know about it or you don't. I don't understand that. And they either deflated them or they did not. But it's more probable than not. I see that there are two equipment guys or assistants, I guess. The equipment guy was exonerated, but there are two people with in-house low-level employees I would guess would be penalized. And I mean by penalized, probably fired.
Yeah.
And the Brady thing is interesting when they say that, they just guess generally don't believe him. Well, as I said, you either believe him or don't. And all this seems to be sort of couching terms into they know what happened. They're just not going to say it.
Okay, so Ted Wells writing, Brady's refusal to provide us with his own emails, text messages, mm-hmm. and phone records limited the evidence available. Why would Tom Brady not cooperate with this?
That's a good question. I don't know, unless he knows he's culpable, and by that I mean guilty, and so therefore saying, I'm not going to give you what I know you can't get elsewhere. So you want a smoking gun, I'm not going to hand it to you. Go find it somewhere else. That's my only explanation, because you think you would be. If you're free and clear, if you have nothing to hide, you turn over everything. If you have something to hide, you don't. And it looks bad for Tom Brady.
Okay, in the Wells report, Brady's name is mentioned 378 times in Deflategate. Bill Belichick's name is mentioned 32 times. Do you make anything out of the number of times it's within the report? Can you read anything out of that?
No, other than what they said is that they didn't find Belichick involved, culpable, whatever. I do think this is, from the very beginning, we had all said that this is probably more involved with the quarterback than anyone else. We had other quarterbacks saying the same thing when we were down in Phoenix for the Super Bowl. We had other quarterbacks. When you're talking down there, talking about, it's a quarterback. I mean, the coach probably doesn't know. The other players may not know, but the quarterback certainly does. You grab a ball, you're going to know whether it's deflated or not. And when Tom Brady had that press conference before the Super Bowl, and I think a week before the Super Bowl, he had talked about how, he really could feel when balls were overinflated, that sort of thing. But then he started backtracking when people were saying, well, these things were underinflated by a pound or more. How would you not notice? And he started backtracking there. It sounded fishy then. It sounded fishy during the Super Bowl and the lead up to it. Then he went out and played it with what I assume were inflated footballs and won a Super Bowl. So that's to his credit. But this sort of camouflaging of the evidence isn't. It just makes him look guilty.
Okay, so and we're talking with Clark Judge for a couple of minutes, Talk of Fame. They have Melvin Gordon on this week and John Harbaugh. This, and I'm processing this as we go. It's been less than an hour on the Deflategate ruling. Roger Goodell acknowledged that the league is considering possible disciplinary action. Now, Eric and I are joking about that on the air. It's, yeah, you're not going to be able to be allowed in the facility during OTAs, and you're not going to be allowed on the field between August 1 and the first week of September, because there's no way he misses the opener on NBC, Patriots and Steelers. What possible sort of action could Roger Goodell put on Tom Brady from this?
Well, that's a good question, and that's why I think there's a lot of couching of terms here. I think what they're going to end up saying is, I think, honestly, what's going to happen, Brad, this is my guess, is that there's going to be a fine. That's what I think. There's going to be a substantial fine, because people talk about, what about a suspension? You know, you look at the Rich McKay incident, for instance. You know, what about, or the texting with in Cleveland, you know, the suspension there. What about those incidents and the precedent they might set? But you're talking about a guy who's won four Super Bowls, a guy who really has become one of the faces of the NFL. He's on the Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks. He's a guy that the NFL doesn't want to tear down. They want to build up. So when I see this report and I hear, you know, more probable than not, he might have known that. You know, those things to me indicate that they're going to go easier rather than harder. And there are going to be a lot of people out there who say, you got to crack down. I mean, 2007, you cracked down on them because they cheated. And they've cheated again here. And you can say, well, listen, yeah, other people do it, goes on all the time, doesn't matter. You got caught. But the fact of the matter is, when you start saying, well, we think, we believe, that tells me that if they're not certain, they're going to hedge their bets, which means the penalty is not going to be as stiff as some people might want.
Talk of Fame Network, talkoffamenetwork.com, Clark Judge with Rick Gosling and Ron Borges every week. Terrific. Three guys that are in the room to vote on the Hall of Fame and take very much pride in their Hall of Fame duties. Does this impact his legacy, Tom Brady?
Yeah, that's the next question. I think it does. Certainly it does. Doesn't keep him out of the Hall of Fame. He certainly will be there. But it does impact his legacy, because I think there are going to be a lot of people looking at him and saying, you know, the one Super Bowl they won after 2007, how did they get there? Well, they got there in a game where they cheated. No, I know what happened in the second half. I mean, they pounded Indianapolis, and I know what the Colts said. It didn't make any difference whether they're playing with underinflated balls, overinflated balls. There was no way they were going to beat him that day, and there wasn't. There was no way they were going to beat him that day. It doesn't make any difference, you know. Richard Nixon lapped the field in 1972, but Watergate was there. It didn't make any difference. He won by a huge vote. Well, he cheated, and this is not to compare this to Watergate, but you can't do that. That's why we have rules. You don't break those rules, and I don't care if there are 31 other quarterbacks doing it. This guy got caught, we think, and that's why I said, you know, it's going to affect his legacy. Is it going to bury him? No, it's not, because they're saying, we're not sure. You know, we think so. We think it have all these signs point in that direction, and I think anyone who listened to those press conferences, Brad, as I'm sure you did before the Super Bowl, would have said, boy, I mean, he's hiding something here. And then he goes out and is not cooperative, and if he's not cooperative, he must be hiding. So that's the conclusion you draw, but there's no hard evidence there. You don't have that email. You don't have those texts. There's no hard evidence. So you think, we believe. And that's why he will skate, I think, on the penalty. And that's why I think, while damaged, his reputation ultimately, it'll remain somewhat intact. But whenever you mention Tom Brady, at or near the top of the story encompassing his career is going to be this, as well as the 2007 Spygate.
Okay, so as I'm talking with you, and you and I are going back and forth here, Huffington Post just released some of the texts, okay, from Jastrzemski and McNally. Mm-hmm. McNally, in one of his texts, says, let's make a deal. This is to Jastrzemski. These are the two guys behind the scenes. Jimmy needs some kicks. Let's make a deal. Come on, help the deflator. McNally says, chill, buddy. I'm just blanking with you. I'm not going to ESPN yet. So this guy, this locker room attendant, calling himself the deflator, and this is Huffington Post, okay? So they have the texts. This is from McNally and Jastrzemski. Something tells me that these two are going to come across as Keystone Cops, and they're going to have to go into a place where they change their names and move somewhere to a different continent if the Patriot fans know what these two are all about. I'm not going to ask you for reaction on that, but it's just, as this progresses, it seems like more and more is going to be blamed at these two guys. And the question of why did Tom Brady refuse to turn over his phone to Ted Wells is going to become front and center.
Yeah, sure. Well, and maybe, you know, maybe at some point one of these two guys or both of them say, okay, here's what we're going to do. I don't think that's going to happen. Where they say, okay, we're going to tell you exactly what happened here. Yeah. I just don't think that's going to happen. I think this will, I think everyone's interested, and I'm talking about from the NFL side, and having this thing go away for lots of reasons. This has been a team of the decade. This has been one of the great quarterbacks of all time. You don't want that reputation damaged. It's been damaged already, as I said, with this report. But when they hedge and say, I'm not sure, seems like they're telling you that, to me, they're not going to crush this guy and they're not going to crush this team. This isn't like Spygate. Boo, there was an immediate reaction to Spygate. Immediate. They had the evidence. What'd they do? Then they burned it. And they burned. I never understood that. But it took them a while to figure that out later because there are all sorts of stories coming up. But remember, the reprisals were immediate in the wake of Spygate, and Belichick got questioned about that team. But here it took a long time for these guys to come to this conclusion. I'm talking about Ted Wells saying, we think, well, there's nothing definitive. There's nothing definitive, Brad. I don't know how there can be a definitive suspension involved here. I think, as I said, there'll be a
they'll still get terminated, and Tom will be allowed to skate. I think you're right on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but I do think, as you mentioned earlier, I do think his reputation will be damaged. I'm not saying damaged irreparably, but it's going to be damaged because every time you look at him, you're going to say, oh, that's the guy who took advantage of this and took advantage of that.
Okay, one other thing. So it was 243 pages, this report. Goodell's got to be involved in this. Troy Vincent's got to be involved in this too, right, in some capacity. So then tomorrow night, this is just the soap opera that can be sports sometimes. Tomorrow night, Jim Gray is supposed to interview Tom Brady at some speaking engagement. Tomorrow night. I don't know if this is going to be LeBron James' decision with Jim Gray, but I think the world's probably going to be watching this tomorrow night unless Tom Brady steps to a podium today and says something. Does he need to say something on this today?
Yeah, sure does. I don't know what he's going to say. If he didn't talk to Ted Wells, he does need to say something. He needs to come out and tell us what happened. If he wouldn't tell Ted Wells the truth, I don't know why we can expect it to come over or come across tomorrow night. I mean, I saw what Robert Kraft said, you know, and one of the words he used was offended. Offended by whom? I mean, he's saying, I still believe that we did nothing wrong. Well, you know, you didn't launch the investigation. This guy did, and it took him a long time to come to this conclusion. So, you know, he said he's not going to fight it because I think he knows what we all know. Something happened there. To what degree, I don't know, but something happened. And that's what Tom Brady's going to have to fill in the blanks on because, as I said, I think he knows what we do too. His reputation has been damaged by this. He's going to go into some kind of repair at this point, damage control, and try to save what he can of what he once was and still is. I mean, it's a glittering reputation. He's a guy won four Super Bowls, but this hurts him.
No, he's never been in this space, right? I mean,
in 07. Spygate in 2007, after then.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, everyone was saying, well, they haven't won a Super Bowl since that came out. Okay, well, they got to the Super Bowl in 2011.
Yeah.
After that Spygate thing came out, what happened? They didn't lose a game, you know. And then this thing, when this came out, listen, I mean, do I think this is a big deal? Not really, but I think it's a big deal that he broke the rules, and the rules are made for a reason. Everyone's supposed to follow them. In that game, yeah, they crushed him. They didn't need to do it. Fact of the matter is, they did it. Fact of the matter is, they won the Super Bowl, too, but they might not have been there. You know, that's the thing. So I look at this, and I've got mixed emotions about it because I do think clearly they were the better team than Indianapolis, and they were the better team in the Super Bowl, but they broke the rules, and nobody should know how to abide by the rules more than this team after that 2007 incident. They should know that everyone's watching them. Well, apparently didn't learn a lesson.
All right. TalkOfFameNetwork.com. Appreciate you on short notice, Clark. Thanks.
Thanks.
Clark Judge, Rick Gosling, Ron Borges. This week, Melvin Gordon, John Harbaugh among their guests on TalkOfFame.com. TalkOfFameNetwork.com, I should say. Sports360AZ.com. Pedro Gomez on the other side on some baseball stuff. We'll circle back on this as we continue on a busy, busy Wednesday.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center available 24/7, 365 at Sports360AZ.com.
Yeah.
It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sesmak.
I missed Pedro the last couple of weeks. Actually, I just dodged him, took the days off from the show, and just figured, you know, enough. Because I don't want to hear about you saying, where are they at with 84 wins and your big bad prediction, Sesmak. They rested up the last couple of days. Come on, give them a break. Doesn't matter the Giants are going to get back PV and that they're close with all those guys who are injured up. Doesn't matter. I have hope. I have faith.
They cleared their minds.
Yeah. I'm sure they did. Okay, so let's. I want to go something a little off the beaten path, and this is not something I'm expecting big news from you from, but what do you make? We're a month away or thereabouts from the number one overall pick for the Diamondbacks. Okay, the baseball draft, the Diamondbacks have the number one overall pick.
Second time in their history they have the number one pick.
And if it were held today, what do you think they would do with that pick?
I mean, I think that pitching is such a necessity that I think they take the big righty from Duke, Michael Matuella. I just think that there's upside to him. And when you take a college pitcher, he can be here relatively quickly. It's not like a high school pitcher where you got to wait for them to develop more in the minors. We've seen it traditionally where college pitchers get up within a year or two, sometimes even a little quicker, depending. Like you remember, Strasburg was up right away. Now he did suffer the UCL injury almost immediately, but he was up relatively quick. And the D-backs are in such dire need of pitching that I know the other consensus pick is the high school shortstop from Florida, Brendan Rodgers, but I just think that pitching is such a necessity, especially for the D-backs. I'd be surprised if they don't go with it.
Well, you have to look at it from the standpoint of a high school pitcher, as you mentioned, is years away. You get somebody immediately, that's fine, but is it an overwhelming selection at number one? I mean, you talk about Strasburg, but there's not Strasburgs that roll through.
Okay? No, there aren't, and no, I wouldn't say that it's a dominant year for the draft, but nonetheless, they hold the draft every year, whether it's a dominant class or not.
Sure.
And if you have the number one pick, you've got to make your decision. And I know that this is a big pick for this organization because it's the first pick of this new administration. Mm-hmm. The Tony La Russa, Dave Stewart, Deshaun Watson. This is their first pick, and it happens to be the first pick in the entire draft. So they can't afford to miss, and it's not like the shortstop Rodgers is a miss either, but he's a high school kid, so you're looking at 3 or 4 years maybe until he's ready to get into the big leagues, whereas the kid from Duke, the pitcher from Duke, could be ready. You know, if they draft him in June, we could see him in September of next year, let's say, already up, because college pitchers, especially at big-time programs, you know, he plays in the ACC. They tend to be fairly well developed, and that's why you see a lot of teams go for college pitchers if there's a quicker need at the big league level, because those pitchers can be ready quicker. That's not to say you don't always look. I mean, look, the reality is that high school pitchers tend to drop a little bit, even if it's mid to late first round. Clayton Kershaw, who was a high school pitcher, I think got drafted somewhere in the teens. So, and look where he is now. But it took him a little bit of time to get up to the big leagues because he is so young. That's not to say you don't take a chance on a high school pitcher, but you've got to be pretty sure, and usually those pitchers drop to somewhere in the middle of the first round.
There's no Winston Mariota debate, though. I mean, what are we going to do without a Winston Mariota debate when it comes to baseball?
Well, it's baseball, and these guys don't get up that quickly anyway.
Yeah. And you can't trade the picks. I've had fans that have asked me, why can't the picks be traded? You know, if the picks could be traded, would you take the stance of this is a great year to trade out of the number one spot because this is not a deep draft?
Probably so. Yeah. And I think that if that were allowed by major league rules, you'd see a lot of clubs do that year in, year out, because you can find a lot of good talent in the middle of the first round or late first round or second round. And you just look traditionally and there's a lot of good talent there. Not necessarily that you have to get that first pick. And if you can get something in return for that first pick, as well as drop down to the middle or second round, then you're still in good shape. So, but yeah, Major League Baseball's preclude that. So there is no trading.
Why? the interest in it. You know this. The baseball draft is...
I think it's coming, Brad. I do think it's coming. I think that's a rule that probably will be changed within the next few years. I do think so. But it's just one of those things that's always been in place, and baseball is always a little slower to move than more sports, than different sports.
Really? I'm stunned by that admission from you. Come on. Like the DH and... Sitting there going through the DH stuff with Max Scherzer last week and Bumgarner, I mean, you know, these are some rules here that we need to get clarified, guys. Come on. Pedro Gomez with us for a couple of minutes. Jared Saltalamacchia. So the catching offense out of the Diamondbacks, the shortstop offense out of the Diamondbacks are getting nothing. Tuffy is well-liked by the community, but Dave Stewart says, we got to start looking around. What do you make out of Saltalamacchia? His contract would be very good to come here. Is he an answer at catcher?
Well, it's low risk. Saltalamacchia is now that he's been released, he's in a position to sign wherever he wants. And if you look around, he'd probably be a backup at most places, whereas if he were to come here, he'd have an opportunity to get it right into the mix and to probably play quite a bit. That's the plus side for him. The downside for the D-backs would be, well, there is really very little downside because all you'd be doing is paying the major league minimum of $500,000 a year pro rate.
Yeah.
So there's really side to take a look and kick the tires, so to speak. The thing is that Saltalamacchia is relatively young, and he's already been with the Braves, the Red Sox, the Marlins, and the Braves traded him at a very young age. The Red Sox did not re-sign him at a relatively young age, and now you see the Marlins outright released him. So you see a pattern there with Saltalamacchia, but that's not to say that the probably won't take a chance. And if he agrees to come here, I think it's low risk. You've got a left-handed hitting catcher. Those are a premium. And but there is some downside in the sense that wherever he signs, it's going to be his fourth organization, and he's still relatively young.
All right, I want to ask you about Archie Bradley in that situation. I know last week when I wasn't here, you touched on it briefly. What are you hearing? When do you think he should be back with the team?
He'll probably only be out the minimum, the 15 days. So he should be back in about a week or so. And tough kid. I've talked to him, and he's not somebody that really I suspect is going to be affected by this. I think he'll be right back in the fire and right back without any apprehensions whatsoever about pitching. He is, he's got kind of that football player mentality. He's from Oklahoma.
Sure.
And I don't think that this is going to be an issue whatsoever with him.
Okay. Robbie Ray is throwing today. What do you know about anything about Robbie Ray? The Diamondbacks are going through, it seems to me, it's much like La Russa when he was in St. Louis. But let's just find out about all these arms, and we're going to finally put a staff together. Ray's getting the start in the second game, I believe, up in Colorado today.
Yep.
You know anything about him?
Very little. I know that he's, been in the Tigers organization the last few years, and he's I think he's 28 or 29
mm-hmm.
years old, if I'm not mistaken, and not really reached the bigs. So that usually is indication of somebody that maybe, is more a marginal type prospect than anything. And but hey, he's going to have a chance. And
at this point,
we've talked about this from spring training, Brad. I never was sold on the Diamondbacks pitching.
Yeah, no.
So I think that, they have to at least find out what they have because, hey, they traded for him. He's there's been some good reports on him early on, but he hasn't been able to move forward, especially to the big league level. So, what's the harm in letting the Diamondbacks find out, hey, is he worth bringing up? Is he worth keeping in the rotation? Is he worth having him start another game? So, they're in a situation where they just don't have a lot of quality pitching, so they're kind of throwing out the net and seeing if anything sticks.
Well, he's going to get me to my 84 wins. He's going to win 12 or 14, I'm sure of it. Okay, Craig Counsell, in all seriousness, I was very happy to see Craig Counsell named as the manager of the Milwaukee Brewers. I think he's taking over a team that stinks, but he's from back there. It will get the fans excited. It's another player off the World Series team that you, as time has progressed, and you and I both knew this when we were there in the moment, there were a lot of future managers or coaches or baseball guys within that locker room. Craig Counsell as a manager, how do you think he's going to do?
you know, a manager is only as good as his talent. And you're right, the Brewers are a little thin when it comes to big league talent. They've got some, you know, guys like Carlos Gomez, absolutely, you know, they have some, but they don't have enough probably to compete, especially in the NL Central, where you're going up 19 times against the Pirates, the Cardinals, the Cubs. You know, there's the Reds. There's just a lot of tough games in that division. So the Brewers have fallen back, but overall, I think we both knew that Council would be a major league manager at some point. He's a very cerebral guy. He's a guy that always maximized the most out of his talent, which was not spectacular, but he stuck around forever. I'll never forget a quote that Bobby Cox told me years ago. I was writing a feature on Council, and his line to me was, he's a guy who in April absolutely will not make your roster. And in September, you absolutely don't want him off the field. He's a winning ball player who does the little thing.
That's good.
And listen, I think the world of Ron Renneke, but sometimes a voice just gets lost and people stop listening.
Sure.
Ron Renneke is not the reason the Brewers were losing. They just needed a different voice. And sometimes that happens. You know, Council, the one thing about him, he's not a boisterous guy. He is a very low-key guy. You and I know that about him. But, I would love to see him do well because I'm very, very – I respect the hell out of Craig Council, and I think the world of him, and I think he is a very, very solid baseball person who, no matter what happens here, will be in baseball the rest of his life and will be a quality person.
Well, and, you know, in that same line, I've heard some criticism now starting to be aimed towards Matt Williams, you know, that Matt's not getting the most out of the Nationals. They've played better as of late, and he has a loaded roster. These former Diamondback guys are in positions where Craig's got nobody, Matt has so much. What do you hear about Matt Williams and the job he's doing with the Nationals?
Well, there's a lot invested in that club. There's a big payroll.
Yep.
There's a lot of quality starting pitching. There's a lot of star power in the field. And, you know, they play in a relatively large market in D.C. on the East Coast, not far from New York. So there's a lot of attention. There's a lot of expectations. And if you don't produce, no matter who you are, you're going to be on the hot seat. So, you know, Matt Williams is a guy that when he was a player, I don't know that any of us said, oh, that's going to be a manager. He had that short temper.
Thought he'd be a coach. I thought he'd be a coach. Didn't know if he'd be a manager.
Yeah. He's got a tremendous opportunity. And the reality is that at that level, if you don't win, you're gone.
Yeah.
So I would say that if the Nationals are still sputtering around and it's July, you might see them make a move because there's just a lot invested in this year. Don't forget that Jordan Zimmermann is a free agent at the end of this year.
Right.
He'll be gone. Doug Fister is in line for a huge pay raise. They may not offer him arbitration and may try to trade him. So there's just a lot of money tied up with this year's Nationals team. And I don't know that they're going to have a long leash and say, oh, it'll come. It'll come. They expect it this year.
Yeah, no, it sounds like you and I are hearing the same things. And it'll be interesting to see what's going on that front. How's your son pitching before I get you out of here? I haven't talked to him in a couple of weeks.
He's doing well. He did not get in. He warms up a lot. He's at almost 14 innings, ERA 1.32.
Not that you're a proud dad or anything. 1.32, geez, oh, man. How many pitches total has he thrown? Do you have that stat for me? I mean, come on. Give me everything.
Boy, if you include the warm-up session, it's got to lead the team. It's got to lead the team.
I'll see you soon. Stay well.
But he's having a blast. Thanks.
See you. Bye. He warms up a lot. That's great. Okay. Tom Brady told investigators he didn't know McAnally's name nor role. According to the report, the Wells report, which was just released a half hour ago, quote, we found these claims not plausible and contradicted by other evidence. So Tom Brady and the Wells report's being made out to be a liar. We're going to talk about that on the other side. We're also going to get in. There's a ton of college football that I think is really interesting today. I appreciate Pedro coming on, as always, every week. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat.